Happy Friday, boys and girls. My name is Jeffrey Scott Mitchell, and I was talking to a coworker yesterday who I hadn't talked to in a while. She had called back into the help desk line to check her phone, and she said that I sounded like me, but I didn't sound like me. So we started, I started being more inquisitive to see what she meant. She said, the quality is there, the tone is there, but there's something missing. So I asked her, was it the cadence or the pronunciation? And she said, yeah, something like that. So I went ahead and started to tell her about my, passing out in my accident and my dental injury. And I kind of knew that it definitely affected my speech. It's definitely affected my speech. And full disclosure, I don't think it's healing properly. So I got a doctor's appointment for April 21st. But hell, I might go to urgent care before that. Not to alarm anybody, just because I said urgent care. The reason I said urgent care, it's because you can walk in. I don't think I'm going to die or anything. But I don't think it's healing the way it should. It's been a month. But anyway, the reason I cut this on, and the reason I'm trying to enunciate and talk as clearly as possible, is because it did affect me. When she said that, that did affect me. Jeffrey's enunciation, the way Jeffrey so eloquently spreads his words, is important to me. See, I'm trying to grow a goatee. See how I let these two parts grow? I'm trying. I don't know. From what I see in this picture, looks like it's working. I've never been this person. I've never been this person with style or anything. I don't want style. I'm anti-style. And like my father, who never wore red, you probably won't see me wearing red, white, or yellow or any bright colors. Give me my earth tones. But anyway, the reason I cut this on, I was thinking the primary drive was that I was scrolling through Facebook and I saw a post from a person who I believe can contribute to the narrative or can contribute to the conversation in a positive way, whatever that means. I mean, I don't see them as a flamer or, whatever. I think, they could play a little bit, but basically I'm saying maybe I'm taking this too seriously. This person posted something that I don't think is contributing to the conversation. I think what they posted helps to deteriorate the conversation or to more polarize it. And I'm thinking, well, maybe I'm taking it too serious. Human beings are like that. And Jeffrey, you tend to, want to keep it on the for real side at all times. And your level of integrity, and I don't know if the word is dignity, but your level of honesty and integrity, it's probably way higher than a lot of people. So maybe I'm taking all this too seriously. Maybe you guys with your memes and how much you love black people being exonerated regardless of their crimes or what they did or didn't do, and how a lot of black people swear down Whitey trying to get them and Whitey holding them down, and Trump is Satan and we got to get rid of him. And I'm looking at this stuff and I don't see, not only do I not see how it contributes to the conversation or discussion, I don't think it's true. I don't see the reality in it. And maybe I'm missing it, And that's cool because I don't mind being wrong. Whatever wrong is, well, I don't mind misinterpreting. Yes, I do. I mind misinterpreting. Let me get that wrong. I don't mind being wrong. And there is no right or wrong. So that means nothing, right? It may mean something to you. And it means something to me. We get the idea. But in the long end, there is no right or wrong. But again, I'm like, and granted, some of the memes are funny. Damn clever. And some of them are definitely meant to be satire, But sometimes I see some, and I can't tell if this person believes that or not, or if they believe that's the true narrative. And my lip is tore up, ain't it? It got all kind of scab on it. I know. So I don't know if that's the true narrative. So the question should come back, well, why does that bother you, Jeffrey? When you're quote unquote above everything, all you got to do is go to Barcelona. Oh, well, I'm going to Barcelona. Why does that affect me? Why do I, when I see something like that, I want to react? Why is it I don't want to say it this way, but why is it that white people don't trigger me? Why do I not see any memes or entertainment or propaganda? I take that back. That's not true. Distributed by white people that irritates me. And I just realized something that does. When white people regurgitate the black racist storyline, that, the cord was swinging, I tied it down. So if it was making noise up until that point, we know that that USB cable is weird or something. So anyway, that triggers me. When I see white people jump on that, you know, oh, black people this, black people that, we need to help black people. Stop racism. Oh, white times is about. When I see white people jump on that, that triggers me. So the question is, see, I'll talk about myself. I ain't ashamed about putting myself out there. Why does this kind of quote unquote super woke black activism trigger me? Why do I find myself watching right wing programming? Why does the MSNBCs and CNNs irritate me so much? Yeah, it's easy to call me Uncle Tom or a sellout, whatever you want to call me. I'm used to it, but I don't think that's the case. I'm probably a conservative capitalist, at least in my mind, or at least the way I perceive those terms to be. But, and all of this, Black Lives Matter, it's not, I don't even think it's black activism. I don't even want to call it black activism. What's going on now? Something on a whole different thing. It's a whole different thing now. This woke, anti-racist fervor tsunami swarm. Why is it that I can't watch MSNBC? Am I taking it too seriously? I don't know. But the other night or whatever, and here's what, or something else I tell you I do. If I read something that one of y'all posts that I find illogical, or not even illogical, that triggers me, or I don't believe in, or I just think is incorrect in the assessment of the event to mean, or what they think that this act meant, say so-and-so happened to somebody, like say two House of Representatives, black people got kicked out, and the one white one didn't, and everybody starts screaming racism, say something like that happens, and it triggers me, I won't reply back to them. I go out and make my own, and just take that energy that triggered me, and pour it into that. Had me up at 2 o'clock in the morning just nailing it. This had me at 2 o'clock in the morning just nailing a post. And I know when I get a good one. I know when I hit the flow I know when I hit the flow, and I don't mean hit the flow like with my mouth and like what happened here, but I know when I get into a flow and the words come out and I hit that zone, I know it's good. So I post it on Facebook. I'll go back and I'll, you know, edit it as I go. And as I see, you know, corrections and changes and wording, then I'll take all that and copy it, put it on my Facebook page. I was just thinking about other project I'm doing. My website was getting shut down because I had an automatic backup set, and that automatic backup generated a 16 gigabyte file, which put me over the limit, which got the site suspended, and I'd have to call and blah blah blah. But I found out, you know, what I had ticked to trigger that backup. I ticked it, so I should be good. But forgot where I was. So yeah, so and yesterday I posted that something like, so what I do is I try to be the biggest obnoxious example of what I think everyone should do. And notice I say I try to be an example of what somebody, what I think people should do and not be. I did that on purpose because I really don't think anybody should be anything. You do you. You do you. That's why if somebody says, oh, I'm not watching the NBA because they're racist, I'm not going to say you should watch the NBA. I mean, you can do whatever you want. It's just not me. I'm not inclined to give instruction. I'm just going to do what I do. So I'll take that little event and say, oh my God. And I'll go make my own demonstration of the exact opposite or why a situation similar to that or how I feel about that situation. That keeps me at a direct conversation with the person, which I quite frankly don't believe they can handle or have time to handle or can be handled in a social media medium, like doing a chat or something. You know, you almost need like a long format podcast, like Bill Maher and Joe Rogan do, like 2-3 hours sometimes. Or maybe not that long, but you know what I mean? You need a sit down conversation to really hash something like that out. So it's like when people like, oh, I don't want to get into it here. And I'm thinking, well, why the fuck did you post it? And why did you start it? And I've learned human beings, just let it go. Just let it go. Do you. That's why I said, you know what? I'm tired of being triggered like this. I'm using the word triggered because that's the only word I can think of. It's not really angry because I don't care enough to be angry. It's like, I ain't been angry in years. I ain't been angry or mad in years. Things just don't get to that level. I won't allow it. Now I get triggered. And what I also don't do is say, if somebody says something stupid, even though I could probably say that and you understand what I meant, even though I don't believe there's anything stupid, I don't use the word, but it would be easier for me to say. So I just use the word trigger. It's my reaction. What you do, what anybody else does, I could care a lot, almost less, none. I couldn't care less. Well, I could care less, but you know, I ain't gonna say I don't care at all. That's going too far. But I do believe, or I hold myself to be above all that. All that's behind me. I lived all that stuff 20, 30 years ago. 10, 15 years ago. I got over that during the Occupy movement. I figured that out when I went through this. I'm not going back to relive it. Kind of like how black people want to go back and relive the civil rights era. They want to replay the same steps that Malcolm X and MLK already fought and died for and won, because it's easier to figure out what they need to do in the modern times. It's easier to go back and repeat and follow the same template and just to fall in line and go back to your little bougie residence in semi-suburbs or mid-city where all the bougie black people hang out, who have never really experienced what real black people are. And when I say real black people, I'm stereotypically talking about them niggers I done met down in the hood where I go when I want to have some real fun. Well, back in the day, when I wanted to have some real fun, or to get my weed. Now, I ain't talking about going down there in gang territory or nothing. But there are deeper pockets of ethnicity in the black community that I think a lot of so-called wannabe black activists never really have experienced. I kind of tell my niece that. I say, when you experience black people, when you experience real black people, you might be shocked. You might be shocked to find out what they believe and how they believe. Because a lot of these kids out here fighting for black people, they think black people this, they think black people that, oh, you know, slavery, oh, we need to help them. Oh, we're in action. Oh, are you okay? Is anything I can help you? Oh, all that shit. Oh, diversity. You go down there where them real niggers is, they ain't having that. And they don't like you. They don't want to be like you. They don't want to assimilate. They don't want to integrate. They don't want to work in your jobs. They don't want to talk like you. And that's cool. They want to maintain that culture, regardless of how backwards I think it is. And I said that, I overstated that on purpose. Or should I say, no matter how backwards I thought it used to be. Now I have a better understanding of it, and I even understand how precious it is. Because once it goes away, it's probably gone. Back when I go back to Youngstown, it's almost like a closed culture back there. You know, of course, a lot of us came up from it. You know, we done moved off the South Side to a degree. Because let's face it, the place where I grew up, the street I grew up is dead. Half the houses are missing. You see deer running around. Possums and groundhogs walking around like, what's up, dog? And that's okay. Things are, Rome even fell. And so my people then got out of that and just moved, you know, away from that, living quote unquote better surroundings, better economic opportunities, even in the area, still in the area. But so, like, if I want real food, not real food, if I want my rib chips or whatever, I gotta go down to Crenshaw. And I'm not saying anything yay or nay about Crenshaw. But to me, that area, Leimert Park and such, is maintaining a stereotypical ethnicity. Which, what I believe to be a stereotypical ethnicity of my idea of what quote unquote real black people are. And I'm not talking about African Americans. I'm not talking about niggers. I'm not talking about niggas. I'm talking about black people. Negroes is another one. There are different levels of being black. And some of us done moved out and moved away and been away from it so far. I think some of y'all forgot. In fact, I know a couple of people I talked to, it's like they forgot what it's like to be down there. I was like, wait. You forget you used to live where I used to live, where we came from? You forgot how it was? It ain't like how you saying. They be like, I wonder how come this, I wonder how come that. I wanna go, nigga. But see, I can't even call them a nigga no more. Cause they ain't. And I say nigger, not nigger. Nigga, you know, like nigga, like hey, nigga what? I can't even call them that no more. Cause they done moved out of that. Maybe not physically, but they've gone past that. And I think a lot of them feel, not guilty, but they feel some kind of way that they maybe aren't connected to that. That they may or may not understand what being black means. I said that incorrectly. You can tear it apart, but I just wanted to get the thought out. When they watch TV or they see black people on TV and they look around at their life and their patio and their nice little living room set and their canopy beds and they say, is this how they live on Crenshaw? I mean, we're the Jeffersons. A lot of my people are the Jeffersons. We moved up. Remember how George, back then I kind of didn't get it. I mean, I got it. Back then I got it. The hood, the quote unquote hood ghetto, moved up. That was the whole premise of the show. Even at that early young age, I got it. And how George was trying to keep it real, whatever real meant. And how Florence was the same way. And then you had the couple upstairs, the mixed couple upstairs. I mean, oh my God. The scenarios that we were placed with and the stuff we grew up on, Good Times. You watch Good Times, a lot of us grew away from that. Not that I was ever in it, I was probably always upper middle class. Mr. Clarence Mitchell wasn't gonna have us doing too much stuff. In fact, Mr. Clarence Mitchell and my mother too. I say more my father, because they were really conservative and staunch. The story I like to tell about my father's house is that, you know, a bunch of us cousins, probably 8, 9 of us cousins grew up, you know, going over there playing, you know. Number one, there wasn't no running and yelling in that damn house, in Nana's house. Number two, the thing I like to say is she had a candy dish right there on the coffee table in the living room. And with all the kids and activity going in and out of that, I think never got broke. I think never got touched or broken. We weren't allowed to go in it. Papa had his chair. I don't think I ever sat in that chair. I think I might have once. It's just, it was protocol. That was my father's side of the family. My grandmother's side of the family, my mother's side of the family, we tore up everything in her house. Except for her china closet, she had her figurines. She had a clock on the TV. And it wasn't allowed to turn her fire on. It was like a thing you could turn on to make a new fire. And it was a couple things we just knew not. But everything else, bam! Here we come. Door slamming, screen doors breaking. You know, that's where we wanted to be. And my ex-wife was like, you know, she's like, oh, I wonder if granddad is going to grow up and say, ooh, do I want to go over here? Or do I want to go to grandma's house and read? I was like, and I told her, I said, Terry, we know how you is. You ain't gonna change. You've been all like all your life. We need you to keep being that. We're gonna clown the hell out of you. We're gonna do this. We're gonna poke stuff at you, but you cannot stop doing what you're doing. Granddaughter needs that, what you're bringing her. The feet go on the ground and we don't do that. And don't get me wrong. My ex-wife ain't all super bougie. I don't know where she's trying to get this hood ratchetness from. I think she's trying to pull it from someplace. But I don't remember her ever being like that. But she ain't nobody around in my family soft. The women, ain't nobody in my family soft. They were some hard women. Not hard, maybe the word, but tough. But anyway, you know, so I was like, yeah, there, you know, you got to keep on it, yeah? How to read, how to do books. And I'll see granddaughter and she'll pick up a book, and it's not like grab it, you know. She'll take it, she'll open it. I can tell she opened it slow, and she'll be doing the pages. Somebody taught her that. I was like, good job, Terry. Good job. Somebody taught her that. And she's just being, another thing that impressed me with granddaughter, she was being real delicate with some things we were doing. She had an Allen wrench. She was trying to get it into the screw. You know, Allen wrench is like bent, like, you know, in like a X or something, so, you know, that pattern. So she actually put it down, set it down gently, and then picked it back up again. I was like, okay. Because she was trying to get the hex part into the hex screw. I was like, okay. And then the way she was like moving the camera, instead of just sitting up there all hard, she was actually doing it delicately. I was like, mm-hmm. Little things like that. So we need all kinds. And a lot of people say, you know, white people this, white people that. And I asked them, I said, well, when was the last time a white person did that to you? When was the last time you experienced racism? They can't tell me. That don't mean it don't exist. I didn't say it didn't exist. I asked you, when was the last time you had a personal encounter with racism? Yeah. Well, one time, I went to the store, and the white lady looked at me funny. I was like, okay. Now, my buddy, who worked at Walmart, tell me, folks be just flat out calling him a nigga. Now, that is what I'm talking about. He said, folks be flat out calling him. Some of them white folks come in there, and they call him a nigga. And you know what's funny? I feel for those folks. I miss those folks. I want to hear the voice. I should say to me, I want to hear the voice of those folks. I want to hear them. I want to see them. I want to hear what they have to say. I want to hear their argument. I want to see their hatred. I want to see why they hate. They've been almost, I ain't going to say extinguished. They've just been wiped off the face of media. We don't see them. We don't see anything about poor white folks. White people going through the same thing black people going through. But you ain't going to see nothing on the news. Unless a black person was involved. And I don't see that last. I don't see people putting up with that for too long. And one way they're going to do it is Trump. Even if he made false promises to them. Just like Obama made false promises. Or not false promises, but made promises that in reality he probably couldn't keep. You know, probably sincerely wanted to go do this. But got to the point like, whoa, this is, you know, campaign promises. This is a little bit more heavier than I thought. Or the opposition pivots to counteract these moves. And so it's a whole different game now. And what he thought he was able to accomplish, he wasn't going to be able to accomplish. Maybe same thing with Trump. Like with Trump. Trump did some good things. There's no denying that. But people hate him like he was Satan. People hate that man like he was Satan. Can't stop talking about him. Talk about Trump more than talk about Jesus. And speaking of which, the Jesus talk is on the upswing. But I ain't worried about it. That ain't going to last. People talk about Jesus, you know, feeling comfortable displaying their, you know, love for Jesus or their belief in Christianity and Jesus as Savior. You know, talking about prayers and prayer this. And I don't mean that, that's not going to last. I didn't mean it that way. I just meant, I know it's just a wave. Because as far as the belief in God and religion, or should I say religion? Not even belief in God. It's religion. As far as religion goes, I don't want to say we won, but I think it's set. I think it's just a matter of time. As people die out, I don't see the younger kids believing in it because they're walking around with all the knowledge in the world in their hand, on their phone and the internet. They don't need to look for God or any kind of supernatural answers. And they'll start to realize that. So, I mean, I'm gonna marinate. I'm marinating in my thought. Letting my thought catch up to the conversation. I probably could pause it, but that ain't no fun. So, I think that's all I got to say. I mean, that's not all I got to say, but that's all I got to say for now. I think I got it out pretty good. I think we did all right. I think I could wrap it up in 30 minutes. Hopefully I get home, cut some sound bites out of this, make it, you know, shorter, give people a better idea or something easier to watch, get to the point quicker, the points that I want to like hit somebody with, get them pulling from the 17 minute mark and make a video where they deliver that message in the first, you know, few seconds of the video. Anyway, my name is, swinging on y'all two times. For me, for the funk, and for every elementary particle that's ever existed in this or in any atom, in any universe that ever was, is, or will be, a totality of it all, a theory of universe, a hypothesis of all as one.